Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah.
We don't have to argue with anybody. We don't have to curse and go around acting bad with our words. We don't need any bricks and bottles. We don't need any Molotov cocktails. We just need to go around to these stores and to these massive industries in our country and say, God sent us by here to say to you that you're not treating his children right. And we come by here to ask you to make the first item on your agenda fair treatment where God's children are concerned. Now, if you are not prepared to do that, we do have an agenda that we must follow. And our agenda calls for withdrawing economic support from you. So as a result of this, we're asking you tonight to go out and tell your neighbors not to buy Coca-Cola in Memphis. Go by and tell them not to buy sealed test milk. Tell them not to buy, what is the other bread? Wonder Bread. And what is other bread come to Jesse? Tell them not to buy Hart's bread. As Jesse Jackson has said, up to now, only the garbage men have been feeling pain. Now we must kind of redistribute the pain. We are choosing these companies because they haven't been fair in their hiring policies. And we are choosing them because they can begin the process of saying they are going to support the needs and the rights of these men who are on strike. And then they can move on town, downtown, and tell Mayor Loeb to do what is right. And not only that, we've got to strengthen black institutions. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We want a bank-in movement in Memphis. Go by the Savings and Loan Association. I'm not asking you something that we don't do ourselves in SCLC. Judge Hooks and others will tell you that we have an account here in the Savings and Loan Association from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. We are telling you to follow what we are doing. Put your money there. You have six or seven black insurance companies here in the city of Memphis. Take out your insurance there. We want to have an insurance in. Now, these are some practical things that we can do. We begin the process of building a great economic base, and at the same time, we are putting pressure where it really hurts. I ask you to follow through here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's that time, people. It's time for the Empowerment Hour. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rohn, coming to you live. Thank you again for tuning in. We'd like to also say thank you to our new listeners in South Africa, Austria, India, and Great Britain. Welcome to the network. The Empowerment Network is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Now, without further delay, I bring in my main man and brother Stan Macklin. Brother Stan, are you there?
I'm here, my brother. Enjoyed that clip from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, a reminder of the importance of economic development from our perspective.
It's the only way. It's the only way. We got a good show today. So let's talk about the NAAEA first. It's the National African American Empowerment Association, and that association is about African American empowerment or black empowerment. You call it what you want. You are who you are. All you got to do is look at yourself. And if you look like me and I look like you, then we're together on it. And it doesn't matter whether you light or dark, black. All that matters is that you are who you are. You're God's people, and you got to know that. From the beginning to the end and all in between, we are chosen folk. So what is the NAAEA all about? It's about politics, understanding politics, where you live, the economic agenda that you must have to secure your future for your children and your descendants. Always understanding the impact of athletics. Athletics is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. Relevant cultural programs that have you to ground yourself with values and principles, teaching them to your children. And lastly, education. It's a comprehensive education, right? Educating yourself on your values, on ethics, on morals, but more important, a consistent regimen of knowing and loving who you are. It's the only way. It's the best way. All right, Stan, today we're going to talk about solutions, right? And we're returning this series on returning to our rightful place, and that place is where we belong. And Stan always talk about the kingdoms that we built in the past, and we have it in us to do again. And so we talked earlier today about this group in Georgia who have purchased 97 acres of land in which they're going to build city. How about that? It's collective work and responsibility. And we're going to talk today briefly about the, because we're into December now, the principles of Kwanzaa. So I'll go through those really quickly. It's unity. It's called Umoja. Uchichagulia, self-determination. Ujima is collective work and responsibility. Ujima is cooperative economics. I like that one. Nia is purpose. Kuumba is creativity. And Amani is faith. We got to have that faith. So today we're going to focus on the first one, and that is unity. Umoja, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. Let me say that again. Unity, and that's what we need. And a lot of people call in and talk about that unity, but we need it. We have to strive for it. We have to put it back in our families. We have to put it in our communities, and we have to live those principles. And so as we turn the corner on Christmas, let's begin to practice, put those policies in place for having unity in the family and community. It's up to us now, people. There's no one else that we can blame now. The finger has to point at you in terms of what it is that you need to do to get the unity started. All right. So anything you got before we go to the line, Stan?
Well, as already been stated, we have to practice it. We can't just talk about it. Lip service is cheap. We have to literally put action to our words and do what we say and say what we do and mean it from our heart. It makes a difference. So it's already there. The ingredients are there for us to become and to do who we really were and are, and we just have to return back to that position. Return back. That's all.
All right, so I'm going to play a clip, and then I'm going to Brother George for our Willie Lynch moment, and then we'll get to the lines.
The book, Black Labor, White Wealth, has taken Black America by storm. Tonight, Dr. Claude Anderson revisits the issues surrounding the controversial book. Welcome to Detroit Black Journal. I'm Darrell Wood. On this edition of the Journal, Dr. Claude Anderson provides solutions to make Black America economically competitive as a group. That's straight ahead on Detroit Black Journal.
Man, you think they're ready for this? It's all about economics today. You got to have an economic agenda and an economic plan. And so, in the minutes, we're going to listen to Claude Anderson, and then we're going to the lines. We're going to start off with Brother George with the Village Moment, and then we're going right into the show.
We are joined now, as promised, by Dr. Claude Anderson, author of the book Black Labor, White Wealth, The Search for Power and Economic Justice. And Dr. Anderson, I'd like to say once again, thank you for joining us on this edition of the Journal.
Darrell, thank you again for inviting me back to your show.
We are hearing that people are responding to this book intensely, perhaps would be the best word I could think of. The book is being bought by the dozens, literally, because people are starting to, I guess, identify with some of the concepts you're bringing up in the book. What we get in this book is a historic context for the situation African Americans, or blacks, whichever term is politically correct this week, find themselves in this country, whether it be economic, political, whether it's the social pathology that we suffer from in this country, in our neighborhoods, or whatever it might be. Your book addresses it. It addresses it succinctly, and it addresses it with a scholarly and informational background. I commend you on the work in the book, and I'd like to ask you, what was the genesis for the book?
Darrell, there are probably a number of things. First of all, I could say there was a dissatisfaction with what was happening politically in this country as it was affecting black folk. I could say it was a response to the book The Bell Curve, which proclaimed that black folk were genetically inferior.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do is tell black Americans that you're not genetically inferior, that you've been socially engineered into your present predicament around this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I also could say that it was a response to the contract with white America.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell black folk that that contract is not new. It was first issued in 1638 by the Maryland colony.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing has changed. And that black folk are still fighting for self-sufficiency and competitiveness in this country. And that we must come together quickly, or what risk being a permanent underclass in the society.
One of the alarming predictions you make in the book is along those lines. You mentioned that blacks will be pretty much a permanent underclass in America by the year 2015. Why the year 2015?
2015, because what I've concluded from analysis is that there's going to be a converging of social factors nationally and internationally that's going to place blacks in a permanent status of underclassship. And one, we anticipate by that point in time, based on all the research that's coming to us, that the next generation of whites is going to be more anti-black than they've been since the Civil Rights Movement. Two, we anticipate by the same token about 86 million Hispanics coming into the United States, and about 41 million Asians by that point in time,
mm-hmm.
which is going to kick black folk out of being the minority in the society,
mm-hmm.
Down to a minority. We've been number two in the society for 400 years as a group. We're going to become number four. And if we have not gotten anything after being number two for 400 years, you guess what's going to happen? We become number four. Because at that point in time, all the new groups coming into America, they're coming in higher than we are, because this country operates off of a preferential acceptance program,
mm-hmm.
which means that groups are coming in based on skin color, going from the lightest down to the darkest, light, yellow, brown, black. And that's what our immigration laws are based on. And black folk would not be able to penetrate through those groups to get to the white society when that happens, because those groups owe us nothing. They don't understand our problems, and they are competitive with us, and we don't begin to be a little more aggressive about being in a competitive posture, they're going to eat our lunches.
One of the things that I should mention right here is the fact that the book is filled with tables, graphs, charts, and the historical accounts of how such discrimination, prejudice, and racism, economically, politically, and socially, were engineered into our system, literally codified mm-hmm. as a way blacks would be treated in this country. So that when we hear you talking about blacks becoming a permanent underclass, or we hear you talking about the inherent racism in the immigration system in the United States, you're not talking off the top of your head, are you?
No. See, the first immigration law was put in place immediately after the Revolutionary War in 1790, which declared this was to be a white country, and it was a zero quota placed on black folk. That zero quota stayed in place until about 1965. Based on the 1880 immigration laws, it moved up a slight bit, less than one half of 1%, and to allow more blacks to come in. But in starting in 1965, it went up to one half of 1%. That's why blacks are in a minority class in this country. That's why you cannot get Haitians into the country, because the larger society is extremely fearful of blacks getting a numerical dominance. And they built a quota system into the country, even in our immigration process, and into our to make sure that black folk do not constitute a threat.
And if so, of course, I should say, if we look at the historical record, it becomes clear that blacks certainly didn't work to engineer their own demise in America. It was pretty much a construct based on second-class, third-class status that we had in society as the labor class, the free labor class, basically. You address that quite extensively in this book.
Yeah, we were always, we've operated off the base of a three-tiered structure. We had the elite class, or the aristocratic class, then we had the management class, which was made up of poor whites, and we had the working class, which was black folks. See, black folk were the working class, contrary to the popular myth up until about the Civil Rights Movement. Blacks were the working class. Now, after the Civil Rights Movement and blacks became obsolete, now poor whites and some of the other whites are claiming that they are the working class in this country.
Mm.
But they were not. They were supposed to be the management class up until that point in time. Blacks were the labor class in the society.
It's interesting that...
There it is. A lot to take in. A lot to think about. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Are you available? How are you?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm doing good, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
How's
it's that time. Everybody's well on this end. Brother Stan, are you
okay,
there?
Okay, brother. I'm here. I'm here, my brother.
All right. We're going to transition into our Willie Lynch moment. Brother George, take it away.
Yes, sir. Today, I'm reading again from the book Stolen Legacy by George G.M. James. I'm reading this from Stolen Legacy because anything that is like a historical lie that's been told about our accomplishments is stolen from someone else is a part of Willie Lynch. So I'm going to read this passage from Stolen Legacy. The term Greek philosophy, to begin with, is a misnomer, for there is no such philosophy in existence. The ancient Egyptians had developed a very complex religious system called the Mysteries, which was also the first system of salvation. As such, it regarded the human body as a prison house of the soul, which could be liberated from its bodily implements through the disciplines of the arts and sciences, which means that, like, the mystery systems was also like an educational system. It didn't just focus on spirituality. An advance from the level of a mortal to that of a god. This was the notion of the summum bonum, or the law of the greatest good, to which all men and women must aspire, and it also became the basis of all ethical concepts. So now, that's a statement that identifies the fact that we as Moors, as black people, came up with those systems, but the Greeks were credited with it because they were classified as Europeans, so they wanted everything to appear as though it came from the Western world. Now, I'm going to say this in reference to the subject of today, which is solutions. I'm a proud member of the NAAEA, the National African American Empowerment Association.
All right.
And what I suggest as a first remedy, a first solution, and I'm going to borrow this from Kwame Ture. He said, join an organization. If you can't start a business right now to help with the economic part, join an organization, because you can help out in another way by joining and supporting an organization. And it's no better place to start than the NAAEA. And that's my line, brother, and I'm out.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Definitely be coming back to you for conversation. But great points. And as always, we have to think about the system, right? And Dr. Claude Anderson talked about social engineering, right? We've been engineered, right? We've been put in a place where we're not always thinking on our own, right? There's situations that we've been placed in that we respond and react to based on our communities and what we have been taught. All right, Brother Stan, are you there?
I'm here, my brother.
Hey, guess what? It's time to go to the lines. We're talking about solutions today, and I'm going to start up top on the deck. 0946, you're first. You're on the top of the deck. Let's shuffle it up. 0946 is Empowerment Network. Marvin Rowan and Stan Macklin. Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. I'm doing fine. Good afternoon. You know, we're talking about solutions, and, you know, you start off with the Willie Lynch letter. I think is really good because that's really more about a consciousness and a belief system. And, you know, a belief system, you know, is, I guess, many ideas that come together and unify to create one thought that eventually shows up in our behavior or things that we manifest. And one of the things about white supremacy is that white supremacy created this duality of black and white. You know, so to constantly believe in the duality of black and white breeds strength in the idea of white supremacy, because white supremacy created the duality of white people versus black people. And so when we hear this term in our thought process, white supremacy, you know, when you think about it, superiority is really not real, because really, to believe in superiority is to believe in inferiority. And to believe in inferiority is to believe in powerlessness. So if we believe in white supremacy, that we believe that white supremacy is power, then we're believing that black inferiority is powerlessness. And white supremacy is just an idea that by default creates this idea of black supremacy. Now, white racism, however, is a system of institutions that unify around deceit, violence, and abuse that create this preference, you know, toward one group of people versus another group of people, which means that we have the power to be, as black people, we could be racist also. But one of the things you'll hear us say in our consciousness, and I think this has to do with the Willie Lynch, the first thing when that comes up, the first thing black people will say is, we don't have the power. It's like, where does that come from? You know, you have just as much power. As if we were to take the concept of racism and flip it and say, okay, well, we're more superior than anybody else, and because of that, we deserve this, we deserve that. We have just as much access to that thought process as anything else. But I think sometimes, and I'll end with this, that we equate white supremacy with power. And white supremacy is just an idea. Racism is the system of institutions, but our institutions exist based on our belief systems, and those belief systems still are clouded with that duality of whiteness that says white is better. So I think part of the thing that NAAE does is it gives us an opportunity to start challenging this belief in our powerlessness, because we're not powerlessness. We have the power to do whatever it is we need to do. We have the power to create the institutions that will sustain us to be the creation that God has created us to be. So I'm just thankful for the solution that we're talking about today is, and part of that solution is getting out of that black consciousness of the Willie Lynch letter. So I like when you start off with that.
You got that right. Thank you, sister. I'll be coming back to you because you always lay it down. Thank you, sister. I appreciate you staying.
Yes, my brother.
What you got, brother? Hey. What you got?
Well, there's so much, man. I tell you, the The day's topic on solution is the key to the pollution of the supreme powers that try to make us think we're subservient, but that is nothing but a bald-faced lie. And as Dr. King was talking about economic development, when we collaborate together and work together, we can do anything. That's our position. That's where we were. We must return back to that. And then the other tape was the brother there. Now, I kind of take a little issue with that because, you know, a lot of people want to always put us down. But there is no, let me say this, and let me underline this. There is no race like the black race. We are indivisible, okay? Because we are survivors. We have survived basically everything they've thrown at us, okay? And we're still here. And so, you know, in terms of I know we have been, there's been the majority, which has been white, then there's been black or African-American. But, hey, we're not going to condescend into some third or fourth tier of people. It's just not going to happen because we dominate the athletics already. And we already have spilled into other areas of achievement, ranging from the Silicon Valley to the Shenandoah Valley. So
come on.
I think that we need to not put ourselves down in terms of like we're on the verge of extinction, because we are the original man and woman. And as kings and queens that God so ordained, we need to walk in divine destiny.
All right. I like that, brother. Returning to our original place. That's what we're talking about today, solutions. We've talked about a whole lot of problems and issues. Let's talk about solutions. I'm going to 4692. You're up next on the Empowerment Network. It's Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. Are you available? 4692.
I am. Hello.
Hey, go ahead, Colin.
Welcome. I was so moved by all of what has been shared so far. I mean, simply the topic in and of itself is empowering. So thank you for this opportunity to share and to be enlightened. My first thought was that when we start to take our rightful place and do the things that uplift
That's right.
us as a people and to get back
mm-hmm.
into that proper position where we are in a position of strength, where we do recognize that we have value, that we are creators, and that from the beginning
mm-hmm.
of time we have been builders. We're thinkers. We're not just doers. And so that's exciting. But I think we also have to think about some of the terms that we use as we, you know, become awakened and become active in this movement. Just simply put, you know, I see some of these definitions as my young children have been, you know, enlightening me, that they have strong reactions to, you know, words like race and racism and black and things of that nature. So I challenged them and I asked them, you know, what is it? Why is it? He was like, you know, well, those definitions, many of the time, have been given to us and pressed on us. So part of the enlightenment, part of the solution has to begin with us redefining ourselves for ourselves. Anybody
mm-hmm.
can be racist, as the sister was kind of outlining. But when we think about
yes.
racism, it's a system. It's a political
mm-hmm.
system, an economic system. It's a
mm-hmm.
health system. It is an entire systematic grouping of things that were designed to oppress us.
Right.
So if I were to ask someone, can I be racist? Yes. But can
yes.
we as a race have racism? Not unless we're going to control all of those systems that have been
right.
systematically put in place into design. And when we think of ourselves, you know, I know that as African Americans, we've kicked around a lot of things to define who we are, whether it's black, whether it's, you know, African American. But
mm-hmm.
but if we want to define ourselves for ourselves, we're going to have to do some homework and understand that there's more to who we are than the color of our skin. So black doesn't sufficiently identify who I am. If I think about my son, he's dating a young lady. If you look at them both, you would think that there's two black, a black man and a black woman in a relationship. But I was reminded that they're in an interracial relationship. She's of Nigerian descent and knows it. He's of a different race, coming from the Igbo tribe and being of an Indian descent. And so when we think about this thing and we're going to peel this onion, then we've got to get back and redefine ourselves for ourselves as a key element in this solution.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sister. I like that. Peel the onion back. Mm-hmm. It's called self-determination. Those are one of the principles of Kwanzaa, to define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. And she did an eloquent job, as the other sister did, of laying it down. Thank you, sister. I'm coming back to you because I know you got some more good stuff. It's the Empowerment Network, Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. What you got, Stan?
Well, sister just brought it down like where it is. That's why. A king operates with a queen, because, you know, we're together, we're able to smooth out the truth and to stand on the truth. So the sisters they just bring so much in depth to the program, and we want to say we appreciate you and for the information that you convey to us. Because it is so important for such a time as this.
That's so true. Let's go back to the lines. I'm going to 3519. If you're ready to talk, we're ready to listen. It's the Empowerment Network, Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. 3519, are you available?
Yes, I am here in the building. I appreciate you guys for having me on the line today to discuss this important topic.
Welcome, brother.
Just building on top of moving forward, and I heard the last caller as well talking about redefining ourselves and really creating our own systems to live by. And me being a young brother, I've been out on the front lines a lot dealing with the controversy behind police brutality and what has been going on with the people that are supposed to be protecting us. And so as we are talking about solutions, one of the things that I've been very, very strongly advocating is that we get back to a community-based, protective style of a system. I think that we've reached a point now where we are still continuing to call on those that are ultimately bringing harm to our community as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just as a young man, I feel that it is now our time to step up and get back to protecting our communities and what have you, the way that, you know, the way that our people would, because clearly we're dealing with people who do not understand where we come from or who we are. And I think that it has built up a lot of pent up fear between us and those that we're living amongst. And so I feel like the only solution for that is for us to step up out of our own communities and begin to protect our families.
That's true. That's true. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. I'm coming back to you because we got some more to go. Thank you. Very thoughtful. And appreciate you calling in, because we need young people to get involved in this dialogue.
That's right.
All right. 2960, you're next on the Empowerment Network. It's Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. If you are ready to talk, we're ready to listen. 2960.
How you doing? I'm a little younger than most. But I feel like, you know, we're talking about solutions and ways to move forward. I think on the short end, and as I look at my friends and my peers, I know they don't like reading. They don't like anything. They don't like reading to improve their mentality, their mindset. They don't like reading to include and expand their perspective or learn other perspectives. And I think that's something that with my job, I'm now able to, you know, start a book club with young, you know, males of color. And we're reading books like The 48 Laws of Power and, you know, stuff like that to really get them to understand that to even get a chance out there, you have to know the systems and the tools that other people are using in their mind of the ways of how to draw in power or how to influence people. And they're picking these things up
from books, you know, not from YouTube, not from social media, but they're reading these things, and you won't even have a chance to compete if you don't have the same tools they have. So, you know, with my job, I'm able to help them understand that these books are your tickets, they're your tools, they're ways to put more cards in your hand when you go out to play. So, you know, that's one solution. I see that is would be very effective, and that's something that people can start on, you know, right now by themselves. You're just looking at what books you need or what books you think might help you.
All right. I like that. All right, I'm going to get Brother George to recommend some books before we get off the line. But thank you, brother. I appreciate you. And I'm coming back to you in just a few minutes as we continue the dialogue. Man, we got some young brothers in here today. The sisters are on fire. Stan, what you got?
Well, I really to commend the young people for chiming in, because you are the voice of today, preparing for a better tomorrow. We can work together and help to collaborate together, but it's you are the ones that's going to carry the torch. And I would encourage you to do as much research, as much questioning, as much listening as you can to enhance yourself so that you can be the lead trailblazers in this society that is here. So I want to thank each of you and encourage you to tell your others, because the National African American Empowerment Association is definitely a place where you need to plug into and realize that we're here. We have pillars to help you be successful, to be that original king or queen, which you are. So keep calling. Keep listening.
That's right.
Be
plug
involved.
Into the power of empowerment. There's no other way. If we're doing it, hey, you know what? You made a great point, brother, and that is our people don't like to read. I wonder why.
Hey, you heard, well, you heard the saying, if you want to hide something from a black man, put it in a book.
Yeah, but
that's,
you know, there's always a penalty, right? There was a penalty for reading. You could lose your life.
Yes.
So imagine back in that day, right? So that's
right.
Ingrained in us in some way. We got to break
That's
the chains,
right.
Y'all. We got to break the chains. That's why we had a Willie Lynch moment, because we've been indoctrinated. And so it's still in place now. If you get on the bus, guess where our people are going? Most of them are going to the back, right? It's conditioning, classic conditioning, and it continues today. All right, Stan, let's go back to the lines again. I'm going to 9282. You're up next on
let's
the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. How are you?
Good, huh, brothers and sisters? I hope everybody's fine today.
Hey, brother.
Yes, sir. Look, just want to say something right quick here. My favorite word, when I use it, I want y'all to know what I'm talking about. When I use that word, nigger, to me, it is defined as a well-trained, well-behaved slave.
Okay?
So when you hear me say nigger, I'm talking about a well-behaved, well-trained slave. And now, back to the topic.
All right. Solution.
The world that we live in today, not the United States of America, but the world that we live in today is built on slavery. Okay?
True.
The world is built on slavery. The solution, and several of the callers have touched on it today already, is true education.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. True education. And when I looked at Wikipedia this week, I looked up slavery for myself. And slavery is the state and condition of being a slave, who is someone forbidden to quit their service for another person and is treated like property. Slavery relies heavily on the enslaved person being intimidated either by the threat of violence or some other method of abuse. Okay? And then it says in early history of slavery, evidence of slavery predates written records and has existed in many cultures. So slavery is rare, however, among what is called hunter-gatherers populations, because because it requires economic surpluses and a high population density to be viable. Thus, although it has existed among unusually resource-rich hunter-gatherers, such as American Indian people or the salmon-rich rivers of the Pacific Northwest coast, slavery became widespread only with the invention of agriculture during the Neolithic Revolution about 11,000 years ago. You hear that? 11,000 years ago. So we're talking 9,000 years before Christ. That was slavery. But the hunter-gatherers at that time, which they defined as a human living in a society in which most or all food is obtained by what they call collecting wild plants with foraging or pursuing wild animals. A hunter-gatherer society stand contrast to agricultural societies, which rely mainly on domesticated species, although the boundaries between the two are not distant. And then archaeologists say, in fact, one Karl Marx defined hunter-gatherers as a social economic system as primitive communism. But then scholars today say that the one political system on earth that is closest to God is communism. Because communism is supposed to be about everybody having the same thing. We all have a house. We all have land. We're all working for each other. We're all doing the things. But they say the reason it doesn't work is because of the greed of man. And they said before, so what we talk about with slavery, so when you get down to it based on Wikipedia, slavery began when white folks met black folks. See, it's been going on that long. Now, if we're going to go back biblically, well, we can go back to caveman days. So, in other words, when the whites came out of the Caucasus Mountains of Europe and started to travel the world and come into black hunter-gatherers who were sharing and living together, and in that society, they said hunter-gatherers, men and women, were on the same level, sharing power, working together. Nor did one man lead every activity among hunter-gatherers. It depended on the activity.
All right.
Who would lead it? Okay? That's how we were. And then they put pictures of hunter-gatherers, so-called pictures of hunter-gatherers, and when I went on Google and in encyclopedias or Wikipedia, of black people to show hunter-gatherers. You see what I'm saying?
All right, brother. I'm about to hold you right there.
You got to go back. All right.
I got to hold you right there. All right. I appreciate it. It's deep, incisive information, but I got to move on. But I'm coming back to you. The deck is full. All right. 4756. It's the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. Thank you, brother, for that. Are you available? 4756.
Yeah, this is Brother Warren from New Orleans. Wake up, just enjoying the conversation. And all I just want to say
is I
appreciate it. Great. I appreciate the young man who talked about the importance of reading. And I don't think it's an issue. We don't want to read. We just haven't been the importance of it in terms of study has not been emphasized as it was in the past. There's no need in 2020 for black people in the United States to be confused about their African origin. Black people worldwide are mistreated because of their Africanness. Our black skin is because of our Africanness. And so African people everywhere on the planet are mistreated. So the Africans who go to the Arab countries or the Africans who live in Europe or the African descended people in Brazil or Cuba, we're all discriminated against, mistreated, particularly by the system of white supremacy. Okay, and so the first thing in order for us to solve any problem is we have to understand that we're not isolated. We're not just in America as black people. We're all over the planet as black people, and the same issues of being blocked out of your own market, other people coming in your territory, making money and becoming wealthy and stable. That's not just an American thing. It's the same on the African continent. etc. And so we have to be clear about who we are. If we're not clear about who we are, then everything else will just be clumsy after that. So book I like to recommend, Chancellor Williams' Destruction of Black Civilization, the various lectures and writings of Dr. John Henry Clark. Those are the foundational information we should be working with. When people don't make reference to those things, including George G.M. James' Stolen Legacy, when people who talk before us with solutions don't make reference to those things, then we have to question what it is they know and how much they know. And let us not forget the works of the late Dr. Amos Wilson. Thank you.
Oh, exactly. Thank you, Brother Warren.
Thank you, Brother Warren.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate that.
AD128, are you there?
Yes, I am, my brother.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
I'm actually doing wonderful. It just lightens up my soul for me to listen to conversations among my brothers and sisters talking about us. I mean, it's just so inspiring, so enlightening, you know, so unifying, you know, that I love it. And I'm so glad that we waited till this point before I got to you either, because the brothers, the two callers before me, introduced something that I got sitting on my lap, and that is five books that we're talking about in terms of solutions. And the dialogue prior to that was about us reading. But it's not just reading. It's reading about ourselves. It's learning who we are. Without that foundation, anything that we do will not be received, because we won't hold it. Because this institutionalized racism, as the sister said, has put people under such a hypnotic spell that it's normal. It's normally accepted. This system justification, this, you know, white is right, black is bad. You know, all of those things are ingrained in our subconscious. And it's only ingrained because there's nothing else there. Nothing else. Okay? So when we start to read about ourselves, okay, through books like with Dr. Belgrade, with the African-American Psychology, that is a soup to nuts book on how we are, done by us, for us, to liberate us. That's just one book, but it is a good place to start, because it goes to health, it goes to psychology, it goes to sociology, it goes to political, okay? It goes to all areas that basically we suffer hidden ignorance of ourselves and how we've been treated. I would go from there to politics about African-American American politics and the African-American quest for universal freedom by Haynes Walton and Sherry Lawrence. Okay, that book tells you the soup to nuts about politics in this country and politically how this system was put together, designed based on oppressing us. We were the essential ingredient to this country, and as one of the other brothers said, the establishment of slavery throughout the world. Okay, we need to understand our place in this thing if we're going to free ourselves.
True.
We need to understand us first. Later for them. We will understand them if we understand us. We can see
true.
The opposite. There's another book by Carol Anderson called White Rage. Okay, she outlines how every time we push forward, they push 10 steps. They push us 10 steps back. Okay, because we don't understand that power. Power is not only, they said politics is power, power is the ability to control and determine based on your influence over the structure. This
got
structure
that right.
is built based on control. Okay? They talk about, oh, well, we can't pass this law this week because we can't get it. If we came as a unified force and said, pass that law would be passed yesterday. Okay? So
that's what unity is all
about. You don't follow, you know, it ain't about you waiting to go through no process. The process is your unification, okay? And then
mm-hmm.
I'm showing another little book called Presidential, Black America and the President by Margaret Kimberly. He wrote a book talking about how presidents were about policies that cemented the institutionalization of our oppressions. Okay?
All right.
We need to understand how we have absolutely no loyalty to be toward anything that this country is about. Okay? We need to understand it and gain control of our future. And last but not least, I'm going to offer one other book. Okay, that I think is essential on a more community level. It's called The Little Book of Race and Restorative Justice. It's written by Fina Davis, Angela Davis' sister. Okay?
All right.
Let me just read this. She says, I've learned that restorative justice, a justice that seeks not to punish, but to heal. A justice according to Faith Thomas that is not about getting even, but about getting well. A justice that seeks the key to transform broken lives, relationships, and community rather than shatter them first. Justice that seeks restoration rather than a deepening conflict. A healing justice rather than a harming justice. Learning about this new but ancient justice marked the complex of our own Islam movement towards wholeness. In other words, stop trying to punish each other and ourselves and trying to heal ourselves, okay? It's not about conflict, okay? It's about understanding, and therefore you can compromise, and then you can understand someone else's viewpoint of a story. But first, you must concentrate on yourself and become proud of who you are. You can only kill somebody who you feel like is less important than yours, which means that you don't feel much about yourself because all life has value. All life
True.
Has value. So the killing of someone else easily, like it's being done on a daily basis, means that you do not value life, which means you don't
That's
value
right.
yourself. All of those
all right.
things are
I got
about
to slow you down
situation.
Right there, brother. I got to slow you down right
Come
there.
Please.
I appreciate
baby.
All your feedback and your information and all your books. I hope the listeners are taking notes because you gave a lot. All right. Thank you, brother. Stay in what you got.
Well, here again, I come at it from a different perspective. All of it's good, especially the admonition to get into the books. There are several profound books out there. You could go any direction with them, I mean, that are there because it all helps to enhance us. But I want to say something that I think that we need to be mindful of. Now, that man has a spiritual component to his life, and that by having that spiritual component, we're not only earthly bound, which means I personally am a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. I know that when I leave this body, where I'm going. And so as a citizen of the kingdom of heaven with a constitution that backs that up, I have a responsibility on earth to have dominion, which is that original position. And so I'm really fearless, but we have to understand that we've become so much of victims because the white man knows what he calls the final solution. He knows that by 2045 that, hey, his rule is over with, his majority is over with, and he is now the minority. And so if you think those 74 million people that voted to make America great again is going to go away, we're sadly mistaken.
You know, dominion is a position of power. I'm going to slide down to Brother George real quick. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. You got some recommendations for us because you are the resident scholar on this end. What you got?
Please don't call me that. That makes me sound like I'm smarter than what I am.
That's all right.
But
I believe
it. At any rate, brother, the idea of book reading is, my belief anyway, is that one book builds into the ability to understand another. Because when you're talking about studying our history as a people, you need some foundational knowledge in order to understand some of the things that are written on a more technical level, you know, by Obanga and Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben. A lot of Dr. Clark, he might write some things that are introductory, but it's good to start out with the introductory book. And the first one that I would say is Introduction to African Civilization by John G. Jackson. Another good book that has a wealth of things in it, this is actually a college textbook. It is Introduction to Black Studies by Marlana Karenga. Now, if you want to understand Francis Crest Wilson's theory of the color consciousness, you can get the ISIS papers, and that's by Francis Crest Wilson. A person that I really like that has written an assortment of short books that, you know, that's really good to get involved with because you could read them probably in one setting. Chains and Images of Psychological Slavery by Naeem Akbar. Anything by Naeem Akbar is great. The same thing, the brother mentioned, The Falsification of African Consciousness by Amos Wilson. The Community Itself, that's another one by Naeem Akbar. This is, to me, the book of the decade, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy. And it talks about a lot of the things that we're experiencing right now, and it's not a difficult book to read. Now, some of the other books that I would suggest as far as thought processes and things of that nature is The Philosophies and Opinions of Marcus Garvey. And then to kind of fully understand how racism works, Neely Fuller wrote a book called The United Independent Compensatory Code System and Concept of Counter Racist Code. Now, I've ran off all those books, and I know that the time is limited, and I'm out, brother.
All right. I appreciate that, Brother George. I told y'all he's the resident scholar in this NAAEA. Because that's just the way it is. All right, I'm going back real quick. We got a minute or so left, but I want to get to the young brothers again real quick. All right, 3519, closing comments from you. It's Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. You got anything for me? 3519, going once, going twice. All right, 2960, how about you? Closing comments, 2960. I guess the young brothers are just listening, but I wanted to give them a chance. All right, we got a minute left, Stan. Give me some closing comments as we get out here. Thank y'all for listening today.
Great show. Appreciate everybody that had input. Let's keep it going. Let's build the National African American Empowerment Association because that's what it's about, being empowered to make a difference here and now and what is yet to come.
You got that right, Stan. And guess what? We're going to end on this note. They got a vaccine coming out. Right? I want y'all to think about, we're going to talk about this next week. Are you taking the vaccine? Do you trust it? Do you believe in it? Do you believe in them? There's a lot going on. There's some science behind it, but it's also a whole lot of money for those companies that are going to distribute it. All right, it is time for me to go, but I want to say goodbye to y'all, and I love you so much. Until next week, it's Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. Peace and blessings. We out.
impossible dream to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow. To
run away
where the brave dare not go.
Ooh.
To right the unrightable wrong. To
love
pure and chaste from afar. To try when your arms are too weak. To reach the unreachable star. This is my quest.
My quest.
To follow that
star.
No matter how hopeless. No matter how far. To fight for the right. Without question or pause. To be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid. I'm